Hi, everyone. So my name is Lee Morales, and I'm here with my fellow collective members, Essex Hill Lords and Molly Goldberg. And I know that we are all three here really grateful to be here with y'all for the next little bit of time that we get to share with each other. And also, again, wanted to thank all the organizers and groups that helped put this together, in particular, No One Is Illegal. Somebody I know got in contact with us about the zine a long time ago. Hassan did, yeah. Hassan. And that's sort of what prompted this very long, long trip. And also, Crazy Night Against Israel and the Apartheid. It's really an honor to be here tonight. So yeah, we are here on tour of the US and Canada with a zine that we wrote called Undoing Borders. And we wrote that back with our collective in San Francisco. I think there's copies at the table up front, if you'd like. And our group is called HAVOC, the Horizontal Alliance of Very Organized Queers. It gets better because if you're trying to get a date, you know, then it's the HOT Alliance of Voraciously or Vengefully or vaguely organized queens. Some people also know us as the San Francisco Chapter of Pride at Work. And Pride at Work nationally represents LGBT union members in the United States. However, it is the UNOS, you know that we are a volunteer-based collective that is working on social and economic justice in San Francisco within the queer community. So tonight we'll be talking a little bit about this document that was written by our migrant justice group, which formed back in 2007. And at that time, we came together to form a queer contingent to send down to the first No Borders camp down at the Mexico, Calexico-Mexicali, U.S.-Mexico border. And perhaps, I'm sure people are familiar with No Borders camp all over the world. It was the first one, I think the only one since then, on the U.S.-Mexico border, yes. And as a group, we have since then continued to work in a variety of ways to resist the violence at the border, both in the Bay and also in the borderlands.
So the zine Undoing Borders was born in part when we were throwing a fundraiser to go down to the No Borders camp. And we got a question that we get actually a lot in our group, which is the question usually is framed to HAVOC, what does what you do have to do with being queer or gay? You don't work on the gay issues, you don't work on gay marriage, you don't work on don't ask, don't tell, so what makes us a gay group? And in the context of the fundraiser, it was, why are you sending a queer contingent down to the No Borders camp? What does queerness have to do with borders? In the moment, I think we were all like, you're not being very nice. But a lot of us started thinking, how can we answer these questions? And we started looking for other people's writings first about the intersections of queer and migrant experience and organizing. And we found some good stuff, but the vast majority of what we could find focused pretty exclusively on the need to get federally recognized gay marriage so we could sponsor our partners for immigration purposes, or the need to get better asylum laws, which while we understand why asylum is important, I think that Gabby did a good job of pointing out that a lot of the narratives around conversations about asylum and why we need stronger asylum rely on some pretty heavy imperialist ideas about, in this case, the U.S. as a savior for oppressed brown people all over the world, and this time oppressed queer brown people all over the world, right? So we wanted to look at something different. And we know that the biggest tragedy of the border is not that we can't marry our partners from other countries, right? Since 1994, with the passage of NAFTA and simultaneously a number of programs that militarize the U.S.-Mexican border, we've seen thousands of people dying in the borderlands. And we've seen thousands of people deported from our communities, and this is not about one political party or another. Under the Obama administration, we've seen more deportations than under any other administration before in the history of the U.S., over 300,000 people being deported a year. So this is all just to say that our ability to marry our partners is not the biggest issue here, right?
So So besides looking at people's writings, the other thing that we did was we decided to host a bunch of queer gatherings, queer community conversations, we called them, similarly like this, where we invited people who were working, organizing, living at the intersections of queerness and migrant justice in particular. And we took a lot of notes on Richard's papers, and we continued to organize as well queer delegations to the Sonoran Desert and to the desert in Arizona to for people to leave water and food in the desert. And we also continued to participate in actions in San Francisco, all the while continuing to talk amongst us about this question and taking some more notes and trying to sort those notes into something that we could share with y'all, well, with the world. So it did take 2 years to do that, and it was 20 of us, and it wasn't an easy process. I think we all cried, or maybe it was just me, but there was a lot of points of disagreement. And after 2 years, we're like, we just got to put something out. It's never going to be perfect. It's always going to be a draft. And so that's what's on the table back there. And yeah, more than anything, it was just necessary for us to put something down. If you ask anybody in the group, there's something in there that we don't like. We already have a lot of revisions. But we wanted to be able to add to a conversation we knew was already happening, and also have something concrete for the conversation to continue. All of those notes, we sorted them out into about two sections in the zine. And the first part of the zine captures some of the many ideas that surfaced for us around how we wanted to organize with one another. And we call that, you know, it's this process of active horizontality that we call fabulosity. And the longer presentation, I think we go a little bit more into it, but maybe we can do that in the Q&A. The second section of the zine is the points of unity, and that lays out some of the demands and sites of resistance where we wanted to respond to specific policy or current political, and the current political context. And they basically, we sorted that out into ideas about freedom of movement, militarization and criminalization, policing of our bodies and work. And now we're on tour with it because we did want to share a bit of what we know and what we've done, and hopefully get a chance to hear from people here about the kind of work that y'all are doing here and the ways in which you're talking about these intersectional experiences.
So we were asked by the organizers of this panel to answer the question, you know, why do you insist on bringing a queer lens to our migrant justice work? And this is something that we often hear also in San Francisco, and the question, you know, what does being queer, you know, again, have to do with borders? So first, I'd like to take a moment to recognize that, you know, as many people in this room are probably aware that that queer and migrant are not mutually exclusive categories, right? Not all immigrants are brown and straight, and not all queer people are white. not always right either, unfortunately. but you know, we also want to make it clear that for us in this word queer, it's not just a discrete identity. We're not deciding, you know, who's queer or who's not. Rather, we're excited about all the many different ways that we do queer. You know, part of the project of the zine was to draw out ways that queerness can be looked at as a lens, you know, for ideas of inclusion and exclusion, whether we're talking about family or citizenship or physical or social borders, right?
And again, when we've given, you know, the longer presentations, we've talked about a few examples of work that we've done in San Francisco to address the way the ways in which borders are constructed or enforced in a variety of ways. And we can talk again more about this during the question and answer time. But a major theme that connects all of the examples is that they're all strategies for responding to the ways in which our day-to-day lives are made illegal or criminal. And because crossing a border or working under the table or loving someone of the same gender, or congregating in groups of three, of more than three of your young and black and brown, those things are not inherently criminal. They haven't always been criminal. They become criminal when some people or groups stand to gain from the ways in which that criminalization allows for new ways to name or control who is fully included or excluded from our communities.
Mm-hmm. So a quick example of this in our organizing work is something we've done with other people in San Francisco, which is finding a law that makes it legal to sit or lie on public sidewalks. So, you know, obviously this is a law that's aimed at the homeless, it's aimed at people who are poor, at queer youth, you know, people who just have to disproportionately rely on public space, right? So, you know, in these laws, they use policing, they use criminal fines, they use incarceration to decide, you know, who or what undesirable elements are able to access or not able to access public space. You know, and when we have these laws, it gives the police a lot of discretion in deciding who they're gonna enforce these laws upon, right? And we've seen historically that this is done in ways that are explicitly, you know, racist and classist. So, you know, working on this campaign has been a great opportunity to work with many different groups of people who are representing these people who are, you know, targeted by these laws, right? You know, policies like Sit Lie, they're similar to gang injunctions and the anti-immigrant bills that we've seen in the United States, in Arizona, and in Georgia, you know, all of which, you know, they police, you know, our ability to move, and, you know, as we are attempting to just carry our day-to-day lives.
So as we think of ideas like borders and inclusion and exclusion, we see that criminalization is absolutely a force that shapes how we're able to participate and move freely through our communities. But we also know that laws, while they're one way that our movement is policed and ideas about inclusion and exclusion are determined, we also know that it's not just determined by law, right? It's also enforced socially. And that's something that we think that bringing a queer lens to this work helps draw out. To share one example of what this looks like for us in San Francisco, we're part of a coalition of immigrant rights groups in the city that have been working together for the past few years to fight a variety of attacks on the sanctuary ordinance in the city. And particularly, we've been fighting a number of laws that make it a lot more likely that undocumented people will be deported if they have any interaction with local law enforcement. And the messaging that the coalition has relied on a lot, and is messaging that I think we hear in the immigrant rights movement in general, in this case has gone something like, well, if undocumented people can't feel safe to go to the police, you know, to report a crime or in case of domestic violence or something like this, then all sorts of crimes are going to go unreported, and as a whole city, we're going to be so much less safe. This is why we don't want these laws, right?
And for us, one, as political activists and as queer people, what's really hard sitting around this table with this coalition is that we know that the police don't make us safe. And we knew that inherently. We knew that through our own experience. And now there's also great organizations that keep statistics like this, right? So in 2000, the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Projects released a report that revealed that of all reported incidents of hate violence against transgender people, close to half of those were perpetuated by police officers themselves. So what that means for us is this: yes, we want to be in these coalitions because we do want to end the local collaboration with federal immigration authorities, but we don't want to affirm the role of police in keeping us safe.
Yeah. So some other messaging that we come across a lot in the coalition we work with, it sounds like, don't deport us, we're not criminals, right? Or don't deport us, we're good family members. And we recognize that these are efforts to rehumanize a whole bunch of people who have been demonized through a lot of government and media efforts, absolutely. But in this messaging, we also hear an implied other. So when we justify in our presence in our communities by saying we're good family members, or in the case of the mainstream LGBT rights movement, when we say don't be afraid of let us get married, right? Our love is just like your love. Who are the implied bad family members or freak loves that we should be afraid of, that should be excluded, right? And as queer people, many of us know that our blood families are not idyllic sites. That categories like good mother and good father, good daughter and good son have been used against us historically to rein in our queerness.
Mm-hmm. But you know, like we have all sorts of meaningful and sustained relationships of care and of interdependence that, you know, while they may not be recognized within, you know, the boxes of heteronormativity and of, you know, capitalist constructs of family with a capital F, are they're nonetheless valuable and they're nonetheless real, right? So family isn't about just, you know, who you're related to by blood. It's about, you know, the circles of people who you're feeling accountable to. Similarly, when we have messages that are like, oh, you know, like we're not criminals, or we're hard workers, you know, there's implied other, you know, in those messagings that, you know, is implying that there's people who, you know, their contributions, their identities are, you know, less valuable. So, you know, what kinds of work and what kinds of bodies are we valuing? You know, we have these messages and who are the criminals who, you know, do deserve to be deported from our community, who deserves to be segregated away, and, you know, who are the people who then, you know, are the other people who deserve to be locked up?
Right. So I think what this does is it begs the question, how can we talk about our worth in our communities without, regardless of which of our survival strategies or strategies for thriving have been criminalized? And I think as Lee pointed out a minute ago, things like crossing a national boundary or sitting on a sidewalk are not inherently illegal. They have to be made criminal. We have to be made criminal. In the process of turning all of us who are complicated, multifaceted, messy creatures into just the embodiment of an illegal act, that happens when somebody or some group stands to gain from that criminalization, right? When it serves to justify our deportation, our imprisonment, our various kinds of exclusions. And so for us, in terms of figuring out how to participate in these movements, it's meant figuring out how to have a messaging that talks about why our communities are better with all of us here, every single one of us. Trying to imagine ways to lift up the importance of all of our different contributions without throwing some people under the bus. And it means sharing our full selves as we work in coalition, which can be hard. Part of that's asking for what we want, not just what we think we can get. And part of it is sharing our different experiences of surviving and thriving that include things like being part of non-normative families, doing sex work, or living in ways that are deemed to be criminal. And all of this is in an effort to forge a strength and solidarity that can successfully challenge the logic that deems that some of us are disposable.
Yes, and as Molly said, doing that work in coalition is incredibly hard. It's definitely, we want to underscore that it's not easy, and that it is messy, and that it is absolutely worth it. Because working with a collective of many different people and in coalition, we've had the opportunity to be part of struggles that are really meaningful to us, and in so doing, have had the opportunity to learn from each other's different strategies that we all bring because we're coming from different perspectives and experiences in the world. And we hope also through that collaboration, we hope that we also have brought something and shared our lens of why we insist on a queer focus in immigrant justice work. Because it's not just because, as Essex said, all immigrants are brown and straight and not all queers are white and citizens. It's not just because of that we do our work. Rather, it's queer is our organizing practice of expanding our circles of care and responsibility across national borders, blood ties, and other socially constructed boundaries.